Thank you, Percy, for accepting my invitation and accepting to be on my show.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Apologies. I've kind of lost my voice over the last few weeks, so it's still like really raspy.
But still, you have given me an opportunity to interview you for my channel. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So I can see you're doing a lot of work, so I thought to tell about your work to my audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any way I can help, that'd be good.
So can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is April Edwards. I'm a GitHub senior developer advocate. I'm also the DevOps practice lead at GitHub. And I've been at GitHub almost 4 months now, actually 4 months exactly today. So previously Microsoft and engineering at Microsoft.
So from you're from?
Sorry, I'm from the UK. So I live in the UK. I work mostly with EMEA-based customers. Some APAC as well, but a little bit of US, but mostly EMEA.
You started working in engineering and now you are senior developer advocate. So how is that transformation?
It's been interesting. I think as an engineer, you're living and breathing like directly with customers, what you're doing, how you're delivering it, and you're utilizing the products to make them better for the customers. As an advocate, you are that bridge between the product and the community. So it's very different in that I don't have as many good engineering stories as much anymore. So I have to rely on the community and customers to give the feedback so I can help make the products better. But it's different because before I was definitely hands-on and I could, I felt the pain of the customer more directly. And still a lot of case I see as an advocate the pain being quite the same for them, but I think it's just different because I'm not doing it as like in a production environment as much anymore.
So as an engineer, how much work you have done?
Oh gosh. I mean, I was in engineering for years. At Microsoft, I was in engineering just for a few years, just because the way Microsoft works and everything. But I started in operations and moved into development, and I mostly went into cloud native. So I started doing a lot in Azure in 2013. Really moved into kind of cloud native technologies after that. So, and then doing things with CI/CD, DevOps practices, pipelines, and a lot with infrastructure as code. So my team was the cloud native team. We were delivering cloud native to customers and helping them unblock. And then I got moved to kind of a more generic engineering team where I got to be a specialist, but then become like more of a T-shaped developer or a T-shaped engineer. So deep dive on the cloud native, but then going broader into some of the other technologies, other language stacks. So that was really fun, but also really challenging at the same time.
And senior developer advocate, so how is this?
It's pretty good. I mean, it's different. It's certainly different. I get to work with people directly instead of just always customers. So I do focus a lot on enterprise customers, like who's using our product, how are they using it, and the challenges they face and kind of what's new and how they can leverage it to make their life in the cloud better. But I think I do a lot more publicly facing stuff. And like I'd write a blog before and people would read it and find it useful. Now I'm giving talks, doing videos, and actually just creating content for the new products and helping people understand how to use it. So I think it has a wider reach without question, which is really cool. So for instance, if someone sees my blog, in engineering, maybe a few people would read my blog or they'd Google search it, Bing search it. Now it's like if I create content, many more people see it. And I think it's great that I can help more people kind of move forward.
Can I say the engineering experience that you have is making you to be a good cloud developer advocate?
Absolutely. I think that's actually how I fell into advocacy. As an engineer, I had some great use cases and real life scenarios, and having been very customer facing focused, like that gave me the stories to help me understand the market better and when I was speaking to the community and relate to them. So I think that was huge for me in my career. I do miss it, but I think that I have a gift in other areas and I've been leveraging that. So I think that's where it's been a little bit different for me.
So four months of experience as a developer advocate.
Well, several years now, actually. So just 4 months at GitHub, but then I was an advocate for, I'm trying to count now, 2 years at Microsoft, officially. And then before that, I was part of like a V team, a virtual team. So I was still an engineer, but I was doing advocacy things, getting involved in advocacy products. So it's probably been about 4 years I've done advocacy work.
So total technology experience.
24 years. So I started about 24 years ago, a much younger version of myself. I started getting into tech in high school in the US. I went to a computer arts and science school and I did my A plus certification. I did short kind of internships throughout school. And then when I went to university, I studied to be a doctor. And because medicine is really expensive in the US, I decided to go back to tech. So I started in tech, tried to move away from it, came back around to it. And anytime I've thought about moving away from it, I just stay in because I love the challenge.
So you saw the technology, both side of the technology, which is the business side and also the development side. So how
Yes.
is your what is your overview about technology business in the industry?
So I think the biggest thing is when we have tech come out, there's a couple things that happen. One is everyone kind of panics, like, this is going to take over the world. Right now, AI is the big thing. And everyone's like, I'm going to lose my job. It's going to take over. I deal with this a lot in the cloud native space as well. Like, we're going to go cloud native. We're going to adapt to the cloud. And I'm going to be out of job because we're not doing stuff. And we see these trends in tech all the time. So the business thinks we're going to adopt it and we won't need as many people or we're going to change everything. But the reality is we just adapt our skills. So the first thing that happens is as technologists, we have to learn to be adaptable and keep on learning. And from the business side of it, we have to embrace change, but understand what that change means. And I think if you think of like, anytime you've been an engineer and trying to sell your idea to someone in the organization or at your company, and they don't get it, they don't buy into it because they don't understand why it's important. So I think understanding the why, moving that forward to the company and giving them the benefit of it. But then as engineers and developers, we adapt and understand it's part of our role. It's the same thing when like, aging myself, I used to work on physical computers. Then we went to virtualization. Then we went to cloud native. Now we're talking about AI and development stacks. It's just changing how we work, but the humans are still needed. So I think that's an important thing to recognize from both sides of the fence.
So you started from high school, you started doing internships, then you wanted to be a doctor, and then you became a technologist. So being in technology for 24 years and having this experience, how you are able to adapt yourself for anything that is coming for the first time? I mean, the constant change that is happening in the technology.
I like to call myself a Swiss Army knife. I've always been adaptable and I'm always willing to learn. And I think that's always been the biggest thing. I love learning, which is why I stayed in tech. It doesn't get boring. It doesn't get dull. If it's getting boring and dull, then I'm definitely not doing the right thing. So I think for me, it just made me really adaptable over time. And I think with tech as well, what's made me a better technologist, if you will, is that I have other skill sets than just tech in my back pocket. So understanding people, understanding cultures, and understanding the bigger solution. So finding solutions to problems and not just looking at it just a straight narrow view. So it's given me a really good broad idea of how to do things, and that's kind of something I've always prided my career on.
So, what kind of problems that you listen from the customers or the clients that you in your present role?
So a lot of customers are, and I'll be honest. I mean, so I'm going to use GitHub as the primary example. GitHub, started in 2008 as a source control repository system, online system. GitHub has now built itself into a platform, and they've made a lot of investments into it. So customers, first and foremost, don't understand the breadth of the platform, what it can do. It's just not one single product. It's a lot of products now. So that's my first challenge is then explaining that message to organizations and enterprises, like we're not just source control repository for, small projects and open source, but enterprise level. So that's definitely number one. The second is getting customers to use GitHub to build whatever app they're doing. So for instance, at GitHub, we use GitHub to build GitHub. That means that all of our people use GitHub. That includes marketing people, HR. We use GitHub day in and day out in every single thing we do. We use issues, projects, et cetera, to organize ourselves. And teaching that to an organization is definitely probably the biggest challenge we're facing. But then not just development teams, but the operational teams, PMs, et cetera, the whole stack of technical teams we're working on teaching its capabilities to.
So what made GitHub to be a wider using application everywhere in the on the planet?
I think GitHub started with a vision and I wasn't around for that vision. But when they were acquired 5 years ago by Microsoft acquired them because GitHub is the largest developer community in the planet, and Microsoft is actually the largest contributor to open source projects. I used to know all the stats, and I don't know all the numbers offhand, but they are the largest contributor, hands down. And they wanted to get close to that developer community, but they want to build out a platform that isn't just a single thing. It was an end-to-end thing, and it integrated into the cloud. And that's what they've really looked to do. So if you think of, how you start your code, how you build it and deliver it, it can all be done using GitHub now. So it's definitely moved on from what it used to be.
So from smaller organization to the larger enterprises, so what is working GitHub to give the great output for this?
Absolutely. And I've worked with customers of all sizes. So I've worked with some really large organizations that are looking to move off of another product into GitHub. And I've worked with the startups that have used kind of GitHub from day one. And then both have extremely valid use cases, just different approaches. So from a startup perspective, GitHub does have GitHub for Startups. It's a program for anyone in a startup kind of opportunity. They offer a lot of stuff through there, different pricing and different features, and they help organizations grow and scale, how they innovate and scale. And that's kind of the big thing that they focus in that sector. And then from the enterprise space, I've spoken to a lot of customers recently that have moved on to GitHub from another product, whether it's Jira, Azure DevOps, et cetera, or Octopus Deploy, whatever they're using. It's about that transformation change. And they're already pretty scaled out. They're inheriting a lot of technical debt. So how do we remove that technical debt? How do we remove those legacy issues? Kind of start net new, but use that at scale. And it all comes down to really for both startups and enterprises, how you scale with automation. So, are you automating your repositories in creation? Are you setting up guardrails? It's very similar use cases, just a very different approach, or the is different.
And tell me, you as a DevOps lead.
Sorry, say that again.
Tell me, you as a DevOps lead.
So as the DevOps lead, I mean, this started when I was at Microsoft. So there's a bit of a legacy history here. So Abel Wang, the late and great Abel Wang, brought me in to help lead some of the DevOps practices. And it really was just natural for me because having worked in the ops space and development space, I just fell into it completely. And Abel brought me in. I started delivering a lot of the content through him, which was through the product group. So on the Microsoft side, we did a huge push into DevOps, especially with cloud adoption. But then I was working with the Azure DevOps product team really, really heavily. So it started there. And then I started integrating the GitHub product into Azure DevOps and into all my demos over the last probably 3, 4 years. So it was very much prevalent. And then when I moved to GitHub, we have tried to start some practices. It's kind of an unofficial practice at the moment. But when it comes to the topic of DevOps, I tend to lead with the product groups, lead with the content, and then be that point of contact for advocates and the technical community for DevOps practices. So whether it's agile working practices, how to do it with GitHub, and very often we're integrating other tools into GitHub as well.
So what do you find today that is shocking that you never experienced or that you never observed in technology before, the experience that you have 24 years?
I think what's really shocking to me is genuinely when I speak to younger people coming out of university or going into university, how ahead of the game they are. Meaning when I was in school, I didn't have a lot of the advantages that kids, young adults have these days. So learning code at an earlier age, also the programs. And when I've interviewed like interns coming into Microsoft or GitHub, they're sharp. They're getting into so many cool internship programs that I never had that opportunity to. And I think that's hard as an aging technologist. You're like, am I going to be, taken out of a job, not by AI, but just these brilliant minds coming in? But we need those brilliant minds. And I think, as you get older, you start thinking, do I go into management? Do I change what my career path is? And your usability in the workforce is still valid. But it is amazing for me to just see how much smarter and how much more attuned and how much more well prepped the incoming generation is. And I think it's absolutely inspirational. And we have a lot we can learn from them coming in and different perspectives.
And what is next after whatever you learned till now?
I don't know. We always talk about career paths and like, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 3-year plan? So being at GitHub and having been at Microsoft, we work on a 1-year financial, a 1-year financial year officially. So every financial year, things change. GitHub and Microsoft have different priorities. So I've had to kind of attune myself to like a 1 year plan, but then also things can change mid-year. So I tend to work off like a 6 month plan and then with a very gray 1 year plan. So I'm a firm believer of like everything happens for a reason, doors open. I think as products come into play, AI comes into play, I'm just gonna kind of go with the flow. So I don't really have a plan. So I just tell everyone to kind of watch this space, watch my career, watch my Twitter, watch my LinkedIn, watch my videos and see what's coming on.
You worked on engineering side a large amount of your life. Now you are into advocacy. So observing when you sit down and relax, and when you think about what you have done, being as an engineer, now being as an advocate, the overall understanding technology, the industries, the change that happened constantly in the industry, and that the problem that you have solved in the industry. Today, if you observe, understanding everything, what is going to be in front, your future idea?
So I think that, I look at a lot of the blogs, and this is actually really pertinent. When we write blogs or do content, how valid is it going to be long for? Like, how long is it going to be valid for? Meaning, if I wrote a blog 3 years ago, is it going to be valid? I kind of didn't think a lot of my blogs would still be valid, but I still have people coming to me with the same questions now that they did 3, 4, 5 years ago. So I think while things are moving forward, I think the reality is a lot of people are not as far ahead as they think they are. And there's so much legacy, infrastructure and code that we constantly fight with. I think we'll be leveraging automation and AI to help get rid of those legacy things, those monoliths, more and more and more. It's something we keep talking about. I think AI can absolutely be used for good to improve our code and allow the humans to do the human things and be more productive. So I think as a society, as a technology society, we're just going to be more and more productive with what we're able to output and play to our strengths as well.
Do you receive the same user experience in parts of the world?
I don't. I think every part of the world is very different. So I moved to the UK about 10 and a half years ago, and I saw the tech over here very, very different. But then having been kind of in that inner circle of Microsoft GitHub side, the UK moves at a really, really fast rate compared to some other countries. And I think Europe is doing really, really well on the tech side. And it's leading. And I think different, but then I go across the world and talk to people in different countries. And actually everyone's still facing similar problems, just at different scales. I think we tend to see the latest and greatest and shiny thing, but the reality is we're kind of still in that same plane of existence. But I think the tech differences come down to maybe different types of tech in different regions. So for instance, maybe a certain language, coding language is more popular in one region than another. So I definitely see some of those differences at more of the nitty-gritty engineering level, but overall, I think globally it tends to be fairly consistent with the same problems, just maybe the different technology approaches we have.
So you have worked in the in a technology company where humans thinks very fast, or humans thinks what happens next with the thing that we are doing today, which is Microsoft. And now you are working on something that that is useful for all the people who works in different parts of the world. So how do you understand this thing, the development side that you have worked? Now you're working on GitHub, and which is integrating with cloud, which was not there before, and which is making human things easier. So what is going to be next?
What is going to be next? I think we're still progressing GitHub as a platform without question. I think you'll see a lot more people transition into GitHub that aren't the traditional developer or programmer. You're going to see a lot more of that, and you're going to see a lot more features come out to address that, to make your life easier, to automate things. And I think the features are what we're seeing and the capability. Also, the big thing we see is data residency and security. Security is huge. And I think, I'm not a security expert in the sense that like I don't brand myself as a security expert, but I've had to think about security in every single product I've delivered or thing I've done is how is it secured? And as humans, we make mistakes and security is hard, but we're going to see a lot more enablement through the experience of our developers, but then being more secure from day zero and not day 100. So not making it an afterthought, but making it a forethought. So I think that security side and that capability side and being more feature rich is what we're really focusing on.
And talking with different customers who belongs to different industries, how is that?
So we tend to work in verticals for industries, and I think it's interesting. We talk about different industries having specific problems. While they absolutely do, most of the problems are very much cross-industry capable, meaning if I have a solution maybe for healthcare or financial industry, it actually could solve a problem for someone else in commerce or another one or very similar. So we do tend to focus on the industry specific stuff, and that's how we're organized, because I think also understanding an industry, you have specific requirements, legal regulations, et cetera, that make that life common when you know how to overcome them. But then they do apply to so many other industries. So I've always worked across pretty much every single industry that you possibly can. I've worked across all of them, media and telco, financial services, government, automotive, commerce, et cetera. I've done so many different industries, and a lot of the problems are really, really similar.
And you are the evidence of the evolution of the technology. You saw the change that is happening in the technology, and you know what happened in last 20 years or 24 years. So what is making human to improve himself and do something that is not existed before?
You know, I think there's a really good stat out there that I think it's like certain percentages of jobs in 20 years don't even exist today. It's like 50% or 80%. It's crazy. I think we're just moving at a faster and faster rate, and we're accelerating at a faster rate. So if you think about, you know, how long it took from 1950, and I wasn't born yet, 1950, I'm not that old yet. From 1950 until like 1990, how things transpired, and then 1990 hit, and then we accelerated. The 2000s hit, and we're accelerating at a much faster rate. Our half-life is getting, you know, shorter and shorter and shorter, and how these things are going. So I think we're just going to speed up. But then I'd also say, on the other hand, like as a human, can our brains compute to that? How do we manage that? How do we put guardrails around that? So I think we're just getting faster in our capability, and that's what we'll see is faster rates of change. And I think the biggest advice I tell people is to be adaptable, be agile, and just make yourself valuable in the industry by keeping your skills up to date and be willing to be agile yourself.
And how you are able to match the clients or customers' requirements with the technology tools or technology solutions that you have.
So I think the famous phrase in tech is "it depends." We say it all the time. So when a customer's like, "Do I go with this solution or that solution or this solution?" It's always an "it depends." And anytime I talk to a customer, I always tell them to put together a must-have and a nice-to-have list. And it's how I've designed every project I've been on. It's how I've designed every solution diagram or solution project I've done. You know, what are your must-haves and what are your nice-to-haves? And those must-haves are going to be your requirements, your limitations, your blockers, et cetera, that might be in your application stack or in your infrastructure. And then going from there, what the requirements are, and then what you want to achieve out of that. And I always tell people, like, it's like a shopping list. Make that list. And the reality is, the nice-to-haves usually get put in the back burner, on the back, you know, get backlogged out, because it's not viable for various reasons. But the must-haves, whether it's compliance, requirements, et cetera, you have to work around the limitation. So I always try to work in that way, so we can define what our definition of done is going to be, how we're going to execute it, and then we choose the technology stack that's right for that customer. And I think the hardest thing I encounter is a customer goes, "I want this technology stack, but I want a 10-year commitment from you that it's not going to change," because people don't like change inherently. And it's like, well, we can't make a 10-year commitment on this product because it's going to change. The cloud changes, and we all have to be agile, but it's going to be for the better. But at the end of the day, we still need virtual machines. We still need, you know, all the things that run the applications effectively, whether it's containerized or serverless, what are you running microservices? Like, it still runs on a machine. So those inherent basic principles are still there.
So can I say you understood everything about technology because you know business side and also development side?
I don't think I know everything about technology. I think that leads into, like, the great thing about what we do is there's always so much more to learn. But I do think that understanding the business side and the technology side has massively helped me to be a better human, to work with people better. And I think the biggest, most coolest part of my job is working with people across cultures. So being an American by birth, I think the original stat was like less than 5% of the American population had passports, right? Like how many people don't get to go out of their country, don't get to work with other people. And I'm so fortunate I do. And I think that's landed to me being successful in my career. And I think there's still so much more to learn about business without question. There's some great books out there I try to read and do some growth and development on outside of tech. So I call them soft skills. Just to help myself understand people better, because I think the hardest part of any project, any tech stack, is the people. People don't like the change, or we have to learn and adapt, or we just have different personalities on a team and we have different working ways, which is our superpower as a team, but we have to learn how to overcome barriers and blockers together.
So as a DevOps lead, you tell me, is it going to be all the time, or AI is going to replace DevOps?
No, I think it's not, because if you think about starting the very, very basic principles of DevOps, 80% of DevOps is a culture thing. AI can't do that. AI doesn't have that ability. It's not a free thinking service. It is wicked smart, and it is sometimes very scary, but we need the humans to do the planning and everything else. And there's a great meme going around the internet right now, like, oh, AI is coming into play, but we still have our project managers changing the scope every 5 minutes, which is true. As humans, we're making that inherent decision about what we're going to do with the tech. AI is not going to replace that. I think AI can make suggestions of what might be the best fit, but it doesn't know enough that we humans know. So it's not going to replace DevOps, but I think it will replace a lot of the automation and help with the automation, but it's not going to help with the culture changes and the people at all.
And how ChatGPT is helping in GitHub?
So ChatGPT, I've used quite readily. So GitHub Copilot uses one of the ChatGPT models at the moment. We use different models for different types of Copilot. So we have new types of Copilot coming out. So we have Copilot Chat, Copilot Docs, et cetera. We're using different models for that, but we do use ChatGPT 3.5 for Copilot today. So the model is currently still limited, still building and still learning. And there's always, someone will try something with Copilot and go, oh, I got a different result than I did last time. Or I've tried it 4 times, gotten 4 different results. The models are still building. I think we still have a long way to go till it's super accurate. But that's why I like to say it's my pair programmer. It helps me learn to do things or fix some code that might have been wrong or do something better. Or sometimes it just gives me a starting place. And I think that's the big piece is sometimes we sit there and we're like, right, we've got a blank slate. Where do we get started? How do we get started? And I've been leveraging that. So yeah, we're using different models to build it. So as time goes on, we're going to be changing our models, as kind of works with how the models give us, the right or wrong kind of answers.
And how do you define communicating with computers and communicating with human beings? Because you do both.
Absolutely. I think people are hard. People are really hard. You and I both have very different backgrounds. We're different ages. We just have different life experiences, which I think is awesome. But bringing that together is hard. And computers are easy because it's a black and white answer. It's always a one or a zero, black and white answers, which is why I love it. I love math, same reason, because it's a black and white answer. It's a very straightforward answer. And humans are hard. It can be something as simple as having a conversation about, agreeing how we want to code, and even just writing code. Like you and I could sit down together, pair up together, and we each have different ways of doing things. We write our methods differently. We write our unit tests differently because of our experience. And I think it's a great way to learn and to grow from each other. But humans are hard, and we're also emotional. Computers don't have emotion. So if we're having a really bad day, it is very apparent in how we write our code and how we work and how we interact with our colleagues. And actually, one of my very best teams I've ever worked on, we had five or six of us on the team. I'm losing count. Six of us. All of us lived in a different country from where we grew up. So we each had two or three different cultures in our like ways of working. And I remember us just hitting so many head walls. And then we took a step back and worked on our culture experience. And from there, it was the best engineering team I ever worked on because we were able to kind of overcome that and work with our strengths and play to our weaknesses as a team. And I've not had that before in any team until that one team, and it hasn't been replicated since. But I think humans are just hard, and we have bad days. We work from home, we have family stuff, we have personal stuff, we've got professional stuff. So, I find the human element's the hardest part of our job.
So after 24 years, you are seeing the communication system that is happening between the countries, the global community. The planet is one today because of the technology. And you working in top technology companies and working in it and understanding technology services and products. The day when you started your first job after completion of your internship, have you thought that the world is going to be one and humans from different parts of the world are going to be one with using the technology field that you are going to be, which connects, which interconnects everybody, and which makes everybody to look at each other and exchange information with each other in a fraction of seconds.
I don't think my younger version of myself could wrap my head around what was coming. I don't think the version of myself 5 years ago, I don't think anyone, one of us could have prevented. I mean, you have two ways of thinking. You have 20 some odd years ago when I was starting out, I just thought I'm fixing stuff and it's straightforward. I'm being challenged. And then I was, learning some, I was literally learning basic programming and visual basic programming. I never thought where I would take it. At all, like that didn't comprehend in my brain. And then, as I kept going in my career, I loved the way doors were opening up, the way I was meeting people, the way I was interacting, and I just didn't think about the time. And then when COVID hit, I think COVID like spun a whole new element to everyone, not just in tech, right? How we work from home, work-life balance, and work-life integration. So I think I never would have thought I would have lived through a pandemic. That's definitely number one. But yeah, like so many years ago, I never would have expected to be in this position. I never expected to be living in another country. Like I'm happy I've done all of it. I'm really, really fortunate to have good life experiences, but I couldn't have clocked it. And I even like 5 years ago. So when I started at Microsoft, it was over 5.5 years ago originally. I had no idea where my career was going to go. Like I knew I was going to work in the UK and everything was going to be cool. And even that's a new culture for me. But I think it's just, yeah, it's just mind blowing. Like I'm actually very excited to see where the next 20 years are going to go. And I hope, really hope I'm around to see it and still be working in tech at that time.
So I have another question, which is the last question, which is related, which is connected with the answer that you gave. So you talked about what happens after 20 years. Today you are in a place where you was not in the place where 24 years ago. You are seeing the evolution of the technology, working in technology for a long time, seeing a lot of things in your life. Now we came to a point, or you came to a point where you can able to see something happening in front of your eyes and ears, and you are observing some things. So now world is connected. So with the with do you think that humans have that ability or capability or capacity to go and create that technology with which we can communicate with other parts of the universe?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, I'm also a scuba diver, so I always think about like what's in the deep, deep, dark parts of the ocean, right? Because we know so little about it. I think absolutely. I think I read a lot of sci-fi, and every sci-fi or fantasy book's about another world or finding a new thing. And I think we absolutely have the technology. I almost wonder like when and this is a rabbit hole. When you read a book or see a movie, like is it to our benefit? Are we behind? As a human race behind all the other races, like it's almost scary, but I think we will absolutely get that technology out there. We'll see more of what's out there. And I think, there could be an argument around like global warming. Will we need a new place to live? Is there another universe we could travel to? I mean, I read way too many books about sci-fi and space travel, but I do hope that like there's something out there that we can learn from, hopefully. But then the other part of me fears that they're going to come and destroy us, as I read in all my books, right? So.
And your observation about space technology companies. What is your observation?
So I think, it's an interesting one. I actually have friends that work for NASA in the States and do a lot of research and cool stuff. And I think it's tough because I think funding has really changed. And then we've had a lot of privatized people come out with their own investments and seen some success. So I think it'll be interesting to see like how countries handle space exploration. So I think I'd like to see more support from each country into how that transpires. And I'd like to see us work together instead of against each other, because there's always a rush, a competition between, the US and Russia, the US and China, or the whomever, to be the best at something, to get to Mars and do the thing. I would like to see us work together more. That would be really cool. More joint efforts as a human race instead of against each other as countries.
So you have a platform today where you have a global reach. What you want to say, that message, that definitely if a top level technologist who is a decision maker listening or watching you wants to take an advice which is extremely valuable and which benefits humans as a whole, not a particular part of the world or a particular country.
I would say as a whole, be nice to each other, really simple, and keep on learning and growing. I think learning about each other, learning about your people, taking care of your people is really important. And then when it comes to technology, that will follow. The technology will follow if you're a good human and treat your people well, encourage them to grow, create a safe space for them to learn and to discuss. I think that's how you build great teams. That's how you build great technology stacks, is by focusing on the culture and the people side.
And you're also a content creator. You create content and you help people. And what is that? Can you share with my audience so that they can learn from you?
Sure, absolutely. So I have a blog. It's azapril.dev, or azapril.dev, depending on your country. I blog for the GitHub blog, blog.github.com. I sometimes blog on some of the Microsoft blogs on occasion, but I tend to have videos come out on the DevOps Lab on YouTube, which is one of the channels I own, and then also the GitHub YouTube channel. And there might be some other content coming out soon. I always tell people, follow me on LinkedIn or Twitter, and I always promote the content I'm creating. So that's usually where you'll see it.
So at last, what is your observation about my work?
About what? Sorry.
What is your observation about my work? Have you seen any videos of mine on YouTube?
I have seen a few of yours. So I've seen some of the people that I've worked with. And actually, that was really cool to see them as well and see their perspective. And I think it's cool because we don't always talk about these things as like almost colleagues where we work together. So it's great to see everyone's perspective and come together in kind of one place. So I think you've done a really great job with interviewing people, getting really good personalities, and a good like different type of technologists in there as well.
So I personally did a master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right now I'm doing DevOps engineering projects. Apart from that is my full-time job. Apart from that, I'm doing these videos and interviewing experts like you who are already in the industry, who solve different problems, belongs to different industries and who are working with different countries. So how this experience, talking with experts like you, how this experience is going to helpful for me in my technology career further?
Well, I hope you, I mean, I always hope every time I open my mouth, well, not every time, but when I do a podcast or something, that someone learns one thing. That's always my goal. Like, I hope I said one thing that was either, I don't want to say inspirational, but like, set off a light bulb to think, oh, that's a really good idea. And then something they can act on it. So I always hope that hopefully you learn something when we speak and your audience learns something. But I think as someone who's creating content, like I hope that when you create an episode, you find a new way to promote it or a new way to tag it or a new way to do something that benefits you. And I always hope that it help just genuinely benefits you and gets you more viewers and gets you the audience that you desire. And that's always why I like doing content for other people, is helping them, because I'm very privileged to be on the platform I'm on. So any way I can help people in the community is always great, because we need more people doing really good content.
Like you. So thank you very much for inspiring us and contributing a lot to the technology world, also to the non-technical customers who are connected with you and who are getting benefit because of your presence in the world. Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yes, absolutely.
And also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks again for your time,
You're
Abdul.
welcome. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Take care.
Take care.